for September the 29th, 2023, we talk about Lies of P, Baldur's Gate 3, Baldur's Gate 3, and much more. Welcome to Level 474. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Ben.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Yeah. What's going on? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Last week I went to visit family. They were vacationing in Florida, so I met up with them there. But we had a good time. It was just hanging out by a beach and drinking drinks and reading books and drinking coffee. So
that sounds real cool.
Yeah. What more can you ask for?
Not to be in Florida.
Yeah, there is that. I don't want to cast the entire state off because there are some people I like who live there. But there's definitely, oh God, I will say this. The civil engineering is god awful there. So we were in Destin, Florida, which is basically Panama City for adults, but it's also whatever. But it's 2-lane roads in either direction, and they just have you turn left anywhere. The civil engineering is not good at all. If you've heard of the concept of a strode, the entire city is just a long strode. So it is not very good. But
I wish that I never learned what a strode was, because now I see them everywhere.
Yeah. And then just feel sad and want to ride on a train. Yeah. But good news, though, after getting back just yesterday, I did my final run before my half marathon.
Okay.
So I ran 12 miles yesterday with some walking in it. So it wasn't flawless, but I feel very adequately prepared for running the 13 and a half miles. So
congratulations. When is the half marathon?
It is this Sunday, October 1st. Nice. So it'll be in Portland.
Cool.
It'll be a good time.
Yeah, well, I mean, you started training for that earlier this year, right?
Yeah, February, March, maybe. Yeah. Been a while.
That is a real cool, I'm overusing the word cool here, but that is an accomplishment to go from, I'm assuming that you,
is where I started.
How many montages worth of training do you think you did?
Oh my goodness. The way I think about it is the route that I do is I run around the lake and do some, various on off points for whatever distance I'm going, but it's 2 laps around the lake for 12 miles. So that was the big accomplishment for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well,
did you try to run a negative split?
What?
Second time around the lake faster than the first?
I ran around it the first time without stopping. The second time it was downpouring. It was terrible. There was a lot of stopping. It was sad, but I made it. So
yeah. It's all right. Well, you do that now, so you don't do it during the race.
Exactly. After yesterday's run, the day of race cannot be worse than that. So it'll be great.
I wouldn't say can't be worse about anything upcoming,
bro.
Not even God himself could make it worse.
I believe you've got it in you, but you just really don't want to stack the odds against you.
That's true. Yeah, you don't want to spit in the face of the running gods, I suppose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well,
so I'm excited for that.
Which Nike, right? That's perfect.
It's right there.
He's buried in the hills.
I'll take the vengeance to their doorstep if they wrong me. Yeah.
Well, we're all rooting for you.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah.
And importantly, I'll be back in time next week to record on Tuesday. So
That was going to be a question I asked off air. Gwen was going to have to edit it out. Yeah. Thanks for getting in front of that.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
How have you all been doing?
Yeah, Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I've been great. So this is the first full day that Jen is back from a 9-day trip to South Africa. She kind of did a mission trip over there and had an amazing experience. And I stayed home and single parented with the kids, which I feel like every single person that, heard I was doing that was like, oh my God, how are you holding up? And remarkably, the answer was just fine. It was actually fine. Yeah, the kids were great. We kind of kept busy and all that stuff. Definitely good to have Jen back, but I feel like I've run the parenting gauntlet now. I ran my parenting half marathon, and I'm on the other side of that finish line. I'm feeling good.
Nice. I mean, you had talked about what you, some stuff that you did, last time. Any cool, father son outings, going on, like, or was it literally just batten down the hatches? We get through this.
So I found the most epic thing. There was this week in Cincinnati, the world's largest bounce house.
What?
It's called like Big Bounce America or something. It's a traveling attraction. And it's really kind of like a whole like 3 or 4 football fields worth of just giant inflatable stuff.
Okay.
Is it a single large inflatable or is it a bunch of individual ones?
About, I would say, a third of the attraction is one giant bounce house, and then the rest of it is
football field side bounce house.
Mm-hmm. Easily.
Oh my god!
Wow,
it is nuts and so much freaking fun. So they got like the Taj Mahal of bounce houses, where there are literally like wings. There is a ball pit wing, and there is a giant slide wing of this bounce house. There is a DJ station. There is a bouncy DJ station in the middle of it.
That just seems very bad for the vinyl.
Yeah. and you know, it was just a complete crazy good time. Then they have another one that's like sports themed, and there's like, you know, hoops that you can bounce and dunk on with beach ball, basketball kind of deals. Those giant like gladiator padded sticks that you can beat each other with. Do you guys ever go to a party with those?
Oh, the, I almost said like punji sticks, but that's what it's at the bottom of a pit that you fall into and die.
No.
Yeah. No,
you ever go to a punji stick party, guys? Yeah. Or is that just me?
You only go once. Anybody who says they remember a punji stick party never went to one. No, Pedril sticks. Yeah. Like, I've never been to a party with one of those, but
yeah,
I know.
It's like, it evokes a quarter staff, but it's so big and padded that you can't really, you know, do much with it. But man, if you can get the momentum going, you can wallop some kids. I said that with a little too much gusto, didn't I? but you know, sports complex, giant, like, I don't know, 2-story tall slide, and then like an obstacle course, that took us like 10 minutes to get through, just nonstop running and jumping. So yeah, that's the best workout I've had all year.
I want to know, what are the physics like of the giant one? Like, if you jump up and down, where does that vibration go? Like, is it possible to send anybody like you can on a trampoline in the bouncy house?
Oh, definitely. Okay. Yeah. I mean, there's so much going on. I don't think you could coordinate that well.
Yeah.
And really what it's a bunch of, you know, bounce house style floors all kind of velcroed together at the end of the day.
Mm.
And they probably got something a little more sturdy than that, but you can see the flaps where they overlap. But yeah, very, very bouncy. It's like you're on a trampoline the entire time. And the funniest part is, you know, my adult fat ass makes much more of an impression than my kids do on these things. And I'm like trying to follow Barrett around, my 2-year-old, who's having the time of his life, by the way. But if I follow too close, I create a gravitational black hole that pulls him back into me. Follow too far, and he gets away. Because apparently kids are able to move at light speed on these surfaces.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just an absolute blast the entire time. So that's how we spent our Saturday. And then went and got them giant ice cream cones on the last day the Whippy Dip was open. That was good times.
That's sweet. Wow, so 1-on-3 and you survived. I like those odds.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, it went way better than I or anyone else thought it would. So kudos to the kids. I'll keep them at least for another year because of that.
Oh.
The idea of a largest bounce house just brings to mind an impossibly large bounce house, by which I am proposing a bounce house of leaves.
Oh, no.
That kid's gone, yeah. Man.
don't even bother. Well, it's so funny because, like, I think this is something that, like, every kid will talk about now and again. But one of the things that my kids are particularly fond of bringing up is, like, what if there was a whole house just made of Jell-O?
Right.
And it's in, like, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and all this stuff. Like, I think that's the kid fantasy. And I feel like we got as close as we could to that without physically being in a house made of Jell-O.
Mm, so, yes.
Good times. Core memory unlocked.
That rules.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about you, Cole?
I don't have an awful lot. It's been a real busy work week because just yesterday, as of the time people are listening, we announced a new show called Real Lich Hours. Woo-hoo! I assure you, the name doesn't mean anything. We just literally it's a series of sounds that sound good. And we like liches, you know, as D&D monsters. Yeah, it's about Baldur's Gate 3. It's going to be premium. It's going to be taking the slot of Bonfireside Chat as we wait for the DLC. Don't worry, Bonfireside Chat's coming back. There's a whole section, like there's a whole announcement episode on the Bonfireside Chat feed and also in WAF in the dispatch we recorded. So it's been a lot of prep, a lot of trying to play ahead so I can clear the decks to really bear down on Baldur's Gate 3, which I know you two are going to talk about.
Yeah, bear good down. Luck. So you're playing a druid.
Oh, no. I'm actually playing a sorcerer right now. But one of the concepts. So I'm doing a follow your nose playthrough. Just doing what seems cool for playing for my own. But for people who didn't listen to the announcement, one of the concepts is, as we are going through for the show, just so we get a good spread on experiences that we can relate, we're doing a good and evil split where Gary is being just the worst bastard he can be, and I'm being I'm being the paragon of good.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
That seems pretty fitting, I think. I see Gary as a chaos magician.
that'll be a good time, I think. And I hope people are excited. There's always that nervousness about it, you know, because like, okay, but enough people have asked about it, broader coverage on the network, that it feels like there's demand and it's a massive game. And it's obviously incredibly good and fun to play. Mm-hmm. So like the ingredients are there, but I don't know. I can't stop myself from being an insecure wreck. So
yeah, not to bleed into the grind, but like it is also an incredibly dense game.
Yes.
And holds up to Bonfireside Chat-esque scrutiny of like, why is this book on this shelf?
Right.
Like there's reasons there. Like you can start putting stuff together.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Yeah. So, and also like, I don't know, you can probably tell when we were talking about the Dungeons and Dragons movie or even in early conversations about this, like, man, I like the Forgotten Realms. It is kind of hit with this broad brush of being like the boring setting or whatever. But I defy that. And I think there's actually cool stuff and good ideas in it, you know, and also it's incredibly nostalgic for me, having, you know, read a whole bunch of Forgotten Realms setting books, back in the day, I mean like middle school and stuff. So I don't know. It just, feels good, man. So we've been pretty focused on that, and I have been, just keeping on otherwise.
Is there any room for a multiplayer playthrough with you and Gary together in the same run?
We are both so, I mean, you two know this about me. I get real stressed out about scheduling something like that.
Yeah.
You know,
so it would need to be live streamed for sure. We can see that stress.
Yeah. It would need to be live streamed. So, I mean, I imagine it'd be fun if we played together. It's just, I don't know. Both of us are such solitary creatures when it comes to games and me for everything. So it's a, yeah. So probably not, but,
fair.
Yeah. Ben, what I'm hearing is we need to start a competitive podcast specifically from the angle of Baldur's Gate 3 as a co-op game.
And then we need to talk Cole into editing it for us since we don't know how to do that.
We've, see if Gwen wants to. Yeah.
Is Gwen playing Baldur's Gate? We could get her on as a third.
Maybe. I don't know. You can ask her. I have never, there are people that we know we've associated with other people who do Dark Souls podcasts and stuff. It's a big pie, and it only gets bigger. The fact that it's the two of you doing it directly in response to us is feels a little bad. I'm not going to lie, but
we are trying to steal listeners from yours. Be as hostile as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't like that very much. I'm not gonna lie to you, really. So, but whatever. I'm not gonna let it end the friendship.
Only Gith steal in absolutes. You can only listen to us or them.
I see what you did there. That's it. Okay. So that's me.
No, this is super exciting, and I can't wait to listen and also to grab some behind the scenes perspective as you're going through.
So I want to save all of my talking about Baldur's Gate 3 for that show. Really don't want to hear any more about it. So I think we should talk about games. What with the regular kind of show, you know, with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing for the last period of time or so. Ben, you've been away the longest, and tell me what you've been playing, and it better not have been Baldur's Gate 3. I'm just going to take a sip of this beverage.
Take a long sip.
This is going to get awkward fast.
Yeah, turns out I've only been playing Baldur's Gate these past 2 weeks, y'all.
As have I.
Drenched computer.
No, actually, I swallowed it. It's fine. Yeah, we're good. Tell me about Baldur's Gate.
Okay, so I think 2 weeks ago when I talked about it, I think I was finishing up with the first area and heading to the second. I'm not sure if I had gotten to the second area or not, or how far
Did you get a warning saying you are about to advance the plot of the game?
Yeah. But I know that, but I don't know if I was there last time I talked or not, I guess.
Oh, I see. That makes sense. I don't think you were.
I think I was on the precipice, but because I remember talking about there's like two options of how you can get to the second area, and I had backtracked and done both. So I think I was close to the end of the first area. Anyway, cleared the second area in the time between then and now, and I've gotten to the third area, and I've started making a dent into that. But then I took a brief pause and actually went back and started doing like a few new run throughs just to try some of the different styles out to see if there's like a second playthrough that I want to go through of like something that I was missing with the first one kind of. So I don't know if I'm going to go down that route or not, but okay. So the main path that I'm running or whatever, the one that I've gotten to the third area or the third act, that's still my monk class. I think my party's level 10. I'm pretty happy with how the monk has played. Like, I think I'm pretty happy with how I've like chose to do that character, and it's kind of turned out how I expected it to. Like the monk's tanking, doing a bunch of damage, has like infinite run distance, has bonus actions that are really good. I looked up a lot into multiclassing over the past week or two as well to see if that would be worthwhile. And there are a few like kind of like busted combos you can try and like lean towards, but you need to be like very particular about planning it. And then kind of like when you turn it on and stuff. So I think for this run through,
what difficulty are you playing on?
I'm playing on normal.
Cause you can get those broken builds. I have not yet felt like I needed something broken to get through.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. I think the main line that I've been doing right now is certainly good enough. But for example, like one of them is you can do a rogue barbarian dual class where barbarians have an attack where they get advantage on attacks, but then people get advantage against them when they do the berserker attack. And rogues have an ability where they do sneak attack, and there's like I think the assassin is one where if you do, if you get a, let's see, it's an auto crit under certain conditions, but I forget what it is. But basically it's like what you do is you just, you do advantage on everybody to try and like auto crit people. And then if you happen to be a half orc with that as well, you roll an extra damage die when you do this. So there's a few things like this where it's like that some of those builds might be fun to do. However, like since that's close enough to what I'm doing right now, because I'm like a half orc monk, and kind of like the idea is you just run in and punch everything until it dies, and then it just tanks a lot of damage as well. So like even with the half orc, if you die, you'll come back with one hit point automatically the first time every long rest. So that's like another reason, and it's completely unarmed, unarmored, and unarmed, because like dexterity will add to the damage when you're unarmed. There's a feat to do that, and then wisdom adds to your armor class when you don't have any armor. So it's so like
you're just ignoring the equipment in this game.
Yes, in that particular
that character,
and, and it allows me to completely ignore the strength stat as well. And like that can so basically I can put those points elsewhere and just be like highly specified. The things that are interesting about playing other run-throughs is kind of like you understand what you value more about the run-through you're doing. So I didn't realize like basically the implications of what wisdom has on the run-through, where like wisdom is a good job for like perception checks and like wilderness type checks. So like you find dirt piles everywhere on the map that you can dig up and get some stuff. Not that that's
Yeah.
Not that that's like essential or anything. But you just notice that if like I've tried a rogue run through and I'm starting right now an intelligence run through on like a wizard, just to kind of see how this play out. Like the rogue run through is fun, but I don't think I have the patience to like go through the entire game like that because it completely changes what the game's like. And the thing that's crazy is like they don't really tell you a lot about like how this stuff works. You kind of have to like figure it out. But like
we talked about that last week. Like this has been a thing in CRPGs for a while, at least the ones that I have played. Stealth is always just a little bit awkward and unexplained and also unreliable. And here, especially with the way that being in combat and out of combat simultaneously works.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of pull that off like a magic trick, and I try to think not too hard about it. Like, well, okay, if they're paused in combat and then these people are walking around, like, how does that line up? The highs and lows of the rogue run through is like, there's a tiefling that was trying to pull a trick on me, but because I was a rogue class, I was like, no, I can spot that like from a mile away. And then added on top of that, I went into like stealth mode and then pickpocketed the kid and stole all of his money. So it's that was great. I love the RP on that. However, it's like
stealing from a kid. You loved stealing from a kid.
Well, it's a tiefling. I don't know. I can't tell their age. Dang. I'm not going to. They just look like a kid. This is a demon, Dennis. Are you defending? Are you in the business of defending demons over here?
I'm pretty sure they're just people in the world.
Are they? But they got tieflings horns.
I bet you killed Karlach too.
No, not on my one run through.
hey, look, in this run where you robbed the tiefling, you now have to kill Karlach. It's required.
The lows here, though, is like you do a separate sleight of hand check for each thing that you try and steal. And it's like if you get caught pickpocketing, they throw you in jail, or you fight people and kill them. And it's like it's way too extreme of a result, and it's like not reliable enough. And so it's like it's just I don't. Even though there can be payoffs with like having fun with it, it's there's too much room for error of like permanent damage being done that I don't think I'm going to do a full run through as a rogue. But it is definitely nice having like high dexterity and being able to like open any door and open any chest. That is a good feeling. However, I think the game does a really good job of like most chests that have valuable stuff in it. Usually there's a key somewhere lying around that'll open that for you. So if you just search long enough, you can get in it without doing sleight of hand checks. And so I think one of the other run throughs, I think I might be trying to do this with the intelligence run, is like I want to do one where I kind of have more knowledge of like arcana and history and stuff like that and be able to call those sorts of things out.
It does open up a bunch of stuff even in the beginning.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even just like being able to work with like magical and alien devices, or like discern purposes of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the two races I was thinking about doing this is, like, I think rock gnomes get double advantage on history checks. So that was one option. The other one is,
what's, I think, double advantage? Do you just mean advantage?
It's double your proficiency bonus. So,
oh, okay. Got it.
And then the other one I was thinking of is, being like a Githyaki, cause you can just do the astral knowledge on intelligence every time you wake up. Mm-hmm. And then, like, that way you just have like a proficiency in all the intelligence checks. I think that might be maybe a better run through. But then, so you're probably going to try and do high int. So it'd be like a Githyaki wizard, which I'm not sure how that lines up, but maybe that could be cool.
Yeah. That scans. I mean, at least from a universe standpoint. Yeah.
And then the other blind spot is, I want to do a run through with a gnome or a halfling or something, somebody small, so I can access all the areas where it's like, I'm too big to fit through this sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm playing from the start. I'm playing a gnome.
Oh, okay.
You're a gnome druid, right?
Gnome druid. Correct. Nice. I mean, your mileage may vary. I have been underwhelmed with the benefits of being able to get into those crevices.
Yeah. I mean,
because
you can't
take the rest of your team with you.
True.
So it's like, I guess I'll go solo as a mini person.
Yeah.
And really hope nothing bad happens.
Gotcha.
It's like required splitting the party, which is very uncomfortable.
It's like halfling rogue is like what you got to do or something. Yeah, just sneak around.
Take someone that is good at being on their own.
Yeah. Interesting.
Usually, okay. I mean, and again, I may have missed a ton of stuff. You never know. There's never been a part where I feel like I saw something I wouldn't have otherwise seen. Because I could get through a small crevice. Everything kind of linked up in other ways.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. The one thing that I like, kind of like my feelings about the third act is, it kind of like how the story works is like, there's a main goal of what you're trying to do in each act, and they telegraph whatever that goal is really well. But then what you're going to be doing in the subsequent acts, it isn't as clear. And perhaps that's because the game might change depending upon your choices. I have a feeling that, you know, there are like pivotal choices you make, but I have a feeling that they do a good job of representing your choice, but it's probably like largely the same outcome, if that makes sense. There are large choices that you don't even need to interact with that you can just ignore if you just go a different way. Which is interesting as well. So I think kind of what I want to do is I want to speed run the long run that I have right now, the one that where I'm in the third act, and just get it done with, and then kind of go explore like walkthroughs and videos to see like what the different outcomes are, and then do another like run through with a character that I really want to go through the rest of the game with. But it's about kind of figuring out, I guess, what that second class would, what I would want to be. So
Would you specifically try someone or a class that was not in your party during your first run through?
I've thought about that, like a bard run through, for example. I don't know. I want to, whatever I do in the second run through, I want to be able to experience the game in a way that I was not able to with the first run through.
I'm telling you, man, you got to go Bard Githyanki and be Weird Al Githyankovic.
Jeez, come on, man. Woof.
All right, I'm going to have to roll for persuasion on that one, I guess, with disadvantage. I don't know. I guess the other thing I'll talk about is like the second area. It's a cool, like very moody theme second area. I won't really spoil what it is, but... it's interesting. It's definitely an interesting, like, artistic, way to do it. But it definitely felt like maybe 2/3 to half the length of going through the first area, because the first area also has these kind of like two transition areas you go through to get from the first act to the second act. Mm-hmm. So that could be part of it. But then, yeah, I do feel a little bit of exhaustion getting to the third area where it's like, oh, I got to do this again. Or I got to explore this like giant open map and there's all these like sub quests. Of course I could like mainline it or something, but I don't know.
Yeah.
hard to convince me to do that, I guess. I still want to kind of explore all the corners, so.
Yeah,
it feels like
there's no wrong way to play this game except mainlining it.
It seems like a way to get exhausted, especially if you know that you're going to be taking taking another run at it. Just trusting that you're going to catch whatever you don't catch the first time, and then just again following your nose the first time feels just about right.
Yeah, I think on a subsequent playthrough, I also might want to go a Gary route and just be like evil and like make the opposite choices of everything I did the first time.
Mm-hmm.
There is a mechanic that comes up maybe towards the end of the first act that I want to talk about. I don't think it's a huge spoiler.
Given that you are the most sensitive about spoilers among us, I think that is probably fine.
Okay, so the premise of the game is like Mind Flayers got you. They put a worm in your brain, and it should eventually turn you into a Mind Flayer, but it isn't for some reason. And you have a party of people, and you're trying to figure out how to cure yourself. Like that's the main thrust of the first act.
Yeah,
it gets to the point where you start finding other people with these worms in their brains, and if they die, you can pick up these worms. And there's a mechanic that's unlocked where you can put another worm in your brain, and there's like this map of a brain that has like abilities that you can unlock with putting subsequent worms in your brain.
Mm-hmm. what I'll say is I've been presented that option and went that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard route and haven't touched it. So it's like I knew that it would give me abilities. I don't know specifically what's on the other side.
Yeah, so I went full worm with my first run through. So my brain is Swiss cheese. Like I got
and we're both doing a quote unquote good playthrough.
Yeah, 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 right? Yeah.
Which it's funny that you can justify either of those choices.
Yeah, it is interesting that it's like an independent choice. Like another thing is like, so how I resolve the second act, and I won't say any specifics or whatever, is I'm not sure if I did it quote unquote correctly or not. I just know I made a choice. And it's like, all right, well then, you know, it's time to end like what you're doing here. And I was like, oh, did I make the wrong choice? Should I not have done that? Like, is there more story if I would have done this? Mm-hmm. So that's something I'm very curious about as well. And that's like another reason why I want to go back and either play through a second time or look through things. But
if I can gush on the choice making for a second,
sure.
I have also encountered several scenarios where you have the option to kind of like watch things play out instead of interfering.
Yeah.
Like two people are arguing, or you know, you see someone attempting to pickpocket someone else or whatever. And there's been several situations where I feel like not butting in was the choice I wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
And that was rewarded as something interesting happened that would not have happened if I had not have
if
I hadn't have jumped in.
Yeah.
So yeah. Like it's not just that they supported a good choice and a bad choice. They support not interacting with the choice as well.
You get to watch that kid tiefling get killed just because he didn't do anything.
in a post Walking Dead season one world, every game that has choice should have silence as an option or inaction as an option. It just makes sense. And it is always interesting. Maybe not the most interesting one to take, but that as a persistent thing does add a little bit of tension to everything else, I think.
Yeah. Well,
and I've never been made to feel when I made the, you know, watch this play out choice that was the, you know, voting present or whatever option. Like,
yeah.
It felt like you could justify in your own head the reasons your character would stay silent,
mm-hmm.
and it played out in interesting ways.
Sometimes it's just the let them cook option, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wish they put that in so many words.
I'm positive somebody made as a mod about a mod of that. Yeah.
But the key differentiator with this game is like all those options are so well supported and not throwaways. Like, yeah. Yeah. It's so good. There's so much content here and it's so dense with good content. There's not throwaway side missions anywhere to be found, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
I think I saw somewhere that like the amount of content in Baldur's Gate 3 is equivalent to like an entire season of Game of Thrones in terms of
they voice wrote acting this in their own stuff. Announcement.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, they did this on their like blog, and they said that the text is like X times more than the entire Lord of the Rings books combined. I think the Game of Thrones one, it's a factor. It's like X times the amount of video that's in Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shit ton of content, and it's really well supported. Another thing I want to talk about is, so with one of my second run-throughs as the rogue, I was noticed that you're rewarded a lot more if you have kind of like expert knowledge about a situation. So I'll give you an example. In Act 1, when you're going through like the tomb very early on, like after the beach area, So the first run through I did, there's like the people up top. I fought them and killed them or whatever. But then I fell down a hole. Like I walked over stones and it just collapsed. And then I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm here now. And so then I explored from there. Mm-hmm. This time around, however, I was able to like look at the area ahead of time and notice that, okay, I know where the cement that falls in are that's like loose. Oh, hey, there's this hanging piece of cement tied from a rope above it as well. I can shoot that, and then that will fall through without me being the one falling through it. In addition, hey, I haven't fought these guys yet. Oh, there's two of them that are right there. Maybe I could shoot it and kill both of them. Oh, hey, there's this third person that's just walking by, so if I time it right, I can kill all three of these people. And not even have a battle. And so that's what I did, like, as a rogue.
See, now you just described a hitman level.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That is such a good analogy. Yes, this is an open world sized hitman level. So apt.
No, I mean, in previous episodes when I have called it an immersive sim, that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
And Divinity Original Sin has that too. To a certain extent, but this just seems to layer that again on top of itself.
Yeah, it's like to the nth degree. And then on top of that, so I did that this way. So I shot the thing, it collapsed and killed those people. And then I went through the other way, the way I think Dennis mentioned it like 2 weeks ago, where you convince someone to let you in and then you fight them and kill them. So when I went through that way and when I opened the door, instead of the group of people being in the tombs, like trying to like clean it out or whatever, they're standing in front of the room where the collapse happened because they're like, hey, this has to be something. This has to be a trick or something like that. So they're in a completely different setup, but it makes sense with what happened contextually. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that is so much to like program around it or to set up. And like, I'm pretty sure the way the game works or how it's programmed is like, they have like that event log to the side when if you can watch it where it's like so-and-so started a conversation, so-and-so did this or whatever. And so I think like probably everything's hooked together like that. Like, such and such got shot. Okay, then queue up. These people are going to go here now and that'll be the setup. Like I imagine it's like an event system that's set up that way.
Yeah.
But it's so impressive to see on a second playthrough it be that reactive. And of course, it just makes your mind wonder, well, like, okay, well, what else is like this? Like what else can they plan around? Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at. I'm kind of on a couple different run-throughs right now where I want to get through my final run-through, get through Act 3, kind of see what the climax of the game is like. But then I also am starting to think and brainstorm and kind of theory craft like what a good second run-through will be and like how that would make for a very differentiated run-through. So, yeah.
Rad as hell.
Yeah, it's still showing to be a very impressive game, this definitely is up there for Game of the Year. I don't see anything that's coming close to being as impressive as it on the horizon, so we'll see.
If it's not, you know, someone got absolutely bribed.
I was thinking of it in a meritocracy sense. If it's not, then we got two amazing games coming out this year. So
yeah,
I mean, sure. This is already a crazy year for games. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. A good one. It just
yeah.
I don't know why I started another sentence there. I didn't have one. It's just been good.
Well, so Ben, you made me think about a second run through, which I haven't really put thought into what, I know I want to do one, but I haven't put thought into what that'll look like yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, good and evil is definitely a scale, you know, a slider that you could use to differentiate the runs. I almost wonder if, and I only say this because Larian has put so much love into supporting all these different approaches, if like just picking a different motivation, and like role playing that, regardless of if it leads you towards good or evil, would reveal different stuff. So like I want to accrue as much wealth as possible, or I want to spread the good news of Shar far and wide, or whatever, you know. And just picking something to role play that is an objective that goes above everything else, and leads you to make decisions either good or quote unquote bad along it. If that would be a more useful way to like theme playthroughs.
Yeah, that could be fun.
Cause that takes you out of the, I did a good one and I did a bad one. Again, I totally a slider you can use, and into like, now you can do a ton of different playthroughs.
There's kind of along those lines, there's one thematic one that I'm tempted by. I think it's like a storm sorcerer, maybe, is the subclass. It's like one that focuses on lightning. It might be a storm, I forget what it is, like storm wizard, maybe? I don't know.
I think that's surprisingly item-based. Like, I see more items for that type of build than I do for any other.
So there's some of the lightning... it deals damage to everything in an area, I think, including yourself. And so you could do like a dragonborn one, you reduce the electric damage you would take. But like the thing that's interesting about it is, like lightning is doubly effective if the entity is wet that you're attacking. So it relies on like you picking up water bottles or having a wizard that like creates water. And you kind of like double tap them, where it's like you get people wet and then you electrocute them. I don't know. So I'm tempted by things like this, but then the thing I worry about is if I go too hard for like something like the combat build, I'm worried that I have someone who is like zero charisma, who like can't talk anyone into anything, and is like, so then I'm like boxed out of a lot of the content that I might also want to see.
That's when you rely on your party members though.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. And so maybe that brings up a good point, is like, I need to think more about like from a party sense and not just like have my character do the heavy lifting for everything. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. But it's like, do you role play like that? That's a combat build, but do you role play then like a sorcerer who will, you know, has to attack anyone who insults him or something like that? Like pick a role play choice as well to guide.
Yeah. He wants to bring the religion of lightning to everything on this planet.
Don't know how well that'll work, but
I want you to see the light. Yeah.
Ning.
You could team up with a paladin. They could get together. Yeah. Anyway. How have you been interacting with this game? I think this is the main one we're talking about, right?
Oh yeah, this is an aperitif. A preview for that coming cast. Cool. Yeah. And Cole, tell me, real lich hours, is that it?
Yes. Yeah.
There you go. Okay.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. No. So I've not played much more than what I talked about it last week, which sounds ridiculous, but I have just been trying to get ahead through like November's games so I can just focus on this.
Having not listened to last week's episode, sorry. How far are you into the game? Just out of curiosity.
I got a little ways into like the beach where you land.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Got it.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, you know, basically like an hour and 20 or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's your class and race?
I am playing as a half elf sorcerer. I knew I wanted to play a sorcerer, and that was the combination of, you know, the half elf had the right traits, I think, to go for it. And I really don't have a concept other than just basically just role playing me, you know.
Sweet.
Yeah, I like the follow your nose playthrough.
Yes. Yeah. So
how did you put your like attributes, or like what are your strong attributes in your pretty strong?
I mean, as a sorcerer, obviously you're going to have high charisma with that. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I gravitated towards sorcerer, that, and also just I like that model of allocating spells better than doing the wizard one. I understand wizards can study and get a wider variety. It's just different. Also, the chaotic element of sorcerer magic is pretty cool. Getting those wild magic effects is interesting.
Yeah,
just because so much of the game is about planning that you know, I can fall into a little bit of an over analysis kind of problem with it.
Sure.
Not to a dentist degree, but it's there. And having a wild card thrown in seems to be,
when you turn into a sheep.
Yeah. It seems to be beneficial. Like, okay, how do we work around this? Yeah.
Maybe this isn't bad.
Mm-hmm. Have some pride, man. Good Lord.
I think a collection of sheep's called a flock, not a pride. Poor Cole's getting it from all sides. He's practicing his breathing techniques to deal with us.
My next run through will be entirely pun based.
Yeah, you two are really in a mood. Yeah, no. So again, extremely little in terms of prep for that. Dennis, did you have anything else that you had tried?
Well, let's see. So I think I am through Act One now, and. The main thing that I've done in the past week is just go through and completely clear out the goblin camp in the first act.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you can very justifiably say like, okay, these goblins are the bad guys, no quarter. I'm just going to go in and rain hellfire down. And after doing a very social and smooth everything over with everyone and try not to fight anyone playthrough to date, I was just like, you know what? I want to spend the next six sessions in combat. Mm-hmm. And so I did. And I am finding the game very tactically rewarding, specifically as it comes to managing a map's worth of combat like I did. So first off, it was very apparent that there was a ton of story and interesting characters and different motivations in this goblin camp, right? Mm-hmm. I just ignored all of that. There's no one left alive.
Sounds like you're RPing a paladin.
Yeah.
I guess, like, you know, the goblin's doing some terrible things to these people. But anyway, I found it very cool that, like, okay, I'm going to start combat in this one room, but they have these like war drums placed around the thing to use to alert people if stuff goes down. So I'll use my familiar as like a goalkeeper of anyone who breaks for those war drums. And like, okay, well, how do I like use charm person to lure people into the room who might otherwise let the combat spill over into another area? Or once combat does spill over into another area, do I need to try to like sneak away and reset? Or do I feel like I've still got enough spell slots left to be like, no, bring it on. I'll do another room. Like all that very tactical combat focused stuff holds up in a really fun way. So I was happy with that. The coolest moment from that clear was facing one of the bosses in the area and was on a bridge and realized, oh, if I use Thunder Wave, I can knock three enemies into the abyss, but I'll also hit my barbarian. But if I angle the Thunder Wave correctly, I will knock the barbarian far enough to be like on the ground on the other side of the bridge. And then all the goblins will go in. So lined it up perfectly, fired off the Thunder Wave, and the bridge collapsed. my caster standing on the bridge fell to their death. So that's my first time using the scroll of Revivify.
Yeah.
And you know, bringing them back.
Yeah.
But like, it was just such a funny moment that I never would have seen coming. You know, it didn't even enter my mind that the bridge could be collapsed. And so just such a cool
that the moment. Bridge was a damageable entity in the world.
Yes. Yeah. Like, holy crap. And you know, that traditionally would be a moment where like, I did not mean to kill one of my characters. I'm going to restart. But I don't know. It was so funny. Mm-hmm. And so interesting that I just rolled with it, which is interesting because when the character dies, there is like stuff on their person that wasn't there before. The character that died had like a note on them that was like, you know, do not open this unless you're instructed to.
Okay.
Wait by my corpse for instructions. If you find my corpse.
Are you sure your character didn't write it? Hey, don't feel bad. People make mistakes.
Yeah. So yeah, just craziness. The other thing that happened clearing out the goblin camp was they had a prisoner, who was a prisoner, another goblin imprisoned for other reasons. There was also a pit of spiders, like giant spiders that I set loose on the camp. But I cleared everything out, and then realized like, oh, the one living being left in this camp is that prisoner goblin. You know what? I'll let him go. So broke him out. He's like, thank you so much. You've given me a new lease on life, and runs away into the jaws of a spider.
That had to have been scripted.
Oh, didn't say God, how long or short that lease was, but
yeah.
Apparently it's day by day. Yeah.
Yes. Oh yeah, my God. No,
those high interest short-term lease are going to cost you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, you know, I the reason I could have the spiders out was I had, you know, speak with animals on and all this stuff. Like if you're not rolling with a party that has speak with dead and speak with animals, you are missing at least half the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's so much you can do with just those two spells.
Where are you using the speak with dead?
On anyone that will talk to me.
So like after you clear a battlefield, you go through and ask everyone 5 questions.
What? No. Corpses will kind of glow green if you have the spell prepared, and they have
just like animals. Excuse me, yeah.
Yeah. Anything interesting to say?
Okay.
And then yeah, animals that'll talk to you. I mean, every animal that I've seen has like a little marker on the map, but
gotcha.
just so much interesting stuff. But yeah, I mean, I've even cast dead, speak with dead on corpses that don't glow just in case. but yeah, I get the message of you know, it's not going to respond to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was the majority of my week, was just this clearing of the goblin camp. It's really funny to me that, you know, there's all these characters that I'm kind of flirting with or kind of like building relationships with. And it felt very clear towards the end of Act One. It's like, okay, well, you've gone far enough that anyone that you've been flirting with is going to start getting horny towards you.
Mm.
And since I was being like nice and kind and flirty with everyone, just everyone wanted to fuck me at the end of Act One.
<Hell yeah.
laughs> Like, please, you know, but it was funny, 'cause there were definitely some characters like in my mind, it was like, you know what? I'm going to make decisions they don't like. Even if it damages our relationship.
So I better have sex with them now before that happens.
Well, I had resigned myself to having relationship stuff gated off with certain characters. And it's like, okay, I kind of like this one, so I'm really going to try to please them and make decisions they'll like. But, and while I like this one and I'm kind of flirting with them, I'm not going to let that change my decisions. And just, I found out that doesn't matter. Everyone still gets horny towards you. So.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Larian, I guess.
Just a player sexual is whatever the character
yeah,
in the game
basically.
Is.
Yeah. I think it's like there are options there to like be mean to them and I think overtly turn them off. But probably as a kindness to people who want to RP it, like
you're
not going to alienate anyone just in the course of regular play. You need to go out of your way to hurt their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that it's not in there. It's just, they're not going to use that as a cudgel to keep you from other cool stuff in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my time with Baldur's Gate.
Cool. Yeah. That was a lot of Baldur's. We're doing a very bad job at not talking about Baldur's
Gate. Failing with flying colors. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was never a possibility.
Good times.
Nice. Yeah. So the only other thing that I have been playing, we've been pretty good about hitting like hot new stuff here recently.
Mm-hmm.
Lies of P came to the Game Pass.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I had like a pre-order, like, you know, just a
window.
Yeah, pre-order window kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to play it as part of Game Pass, so I waited. Yeah, that's a Bloodborne like.
Okay.
In a way that is a little bit under uninspiring, primarily because it is very hard to be invested, not just in like, hey, this is a retelling of the Pinocchio myth, but this is a Victorian city in the middle of a robot apocalypse. like there's something about
just that. Taking all of FromSoft's games and putting them together, or
there is something about that that is just very very uninspiring to me. From a it just seems very
derivative,
not derivative, like whatever. It is just incredibly uncool. And somebody on a stream had pointed out, like, the thing that made it interesting to them is this is a Korean studio interpreting, you know, like I think Pinocchio is like is that an Italian fairy tale? I think something. So like, you know, that is an interesting kind of like cultural angle. And as much as I, you know, have kind of moved to be a little bit more mechanics forward, like, hey, if the play is sound, you know, the theming can just kind of be like, yeah, no, I can go along with a bunch of stuff. Theming is not nothing. And, you know, there are not a lot of questions here that I feel especially motivated to chase down. I don't want to say that the play is bad, because the play is, you know, there, and it has been improved from the demo, I have found. Like the dodge is a little bit better.
Can be improved, but still bad.
Yeah, it's not just even, you know, even bad. So the dodge feels better. Everything feels like a little bit more responsive. Like, parrying feels good now in a way that it just didn't. It is hard to quantify the way that it felt bad in the demo. But
it's like Mario jump feeling sort of thing.
It took tuning, and I think that demo was especially the demo was a success, I think, for everybody around, because that gave them good enough feedback to be able to deliver something that does feel good. The problem that I have found, and somebody can come in and correct me on this, but there are no iframes as far as I can tell. For people who are not, you know, familiar with that concept, iframes, invincibility frames. It is, you know, during certain actions, but especially in dodging or rolling, in a Souls-like, very particularly, it is a time, you know, a very small window where, when you are performing that action, enemy attacks will not hurt you, even if the model, you know, the model's hitbox makes contact with your hurt box, right? Or I forget which one's which all the time, so make that make sense. Even in Bloodborne, where, you know, you're meant to be not doing like a big old dodge roll, it is quick steps and all of that, the iframes are relatively generous, right? And if you are playing a Souls-like, you know, if you're coming from FromSoft or even other games that have kind of modeled themselves after that, there are two things that are really important about the combat, which is, iframes in the dodge and like animation, priority and cancellation. Like, are you committed to an attack when it's in the animation, you know, like when you're in an animation, or is there a way for you to kind of break out of it in order to react to something? In this, no matter when you dodge, you have to dodge so that the enemy does not make contact with you. So you cannot like dodge through, like a big swing. This is very apparent in the boss. That is that was at the end of the tutorial and is at the end of the demo as well. It is basically like Souls like first boss dot text in terms of being big and slow and telegraphing its attacks a lot. Think the Asylum Demon from Dark Souls, right? While also having like a close up almost AoE that will punish you if you are sticking too close. And then it also has a second phase. The Silent Demon is a bad comparison. It's more like The Last Giant, because the second phase, it's got like this big tall hat on. It rips its head off by the hat, and suddenly he is wielding his head like a club from the end of the hat. And now he has longer reach and all of that. It is most apparent when you are trying to dodge around that longer reach. If you are in close or at mid range, there is nothing that I found that you could do other than dodging away from it, putting you, you know, at that point in the game where you have very little in the way of range damage options, putting you in a place where like you're just kind of like constantly on the back foot. I understand they are tutorializing that you cannot necessarily rely on your dodge. You have to get in there and parry, to which I would counter, do not make this feel like Bloodborne, because there is so little in Bloodborne that is about the parry. It is necessary for a lot of fights, but it is not the only viable strategy. So I've got that mechanical quibble with this. If there are iframes and they are just tremendously reduced, we'll take that feedback and understand. But right now the feeling is like, yeah, this dodge just does not feel right to me. Which sounds nitpicky, but when your primary defensive vocabulary is to dodge, then that ends up being a little bit sticky and kind of becomes a sheen over the entire game.
Yeah. Like the inventory system in Starfield.
Yeah. You know, just a constant little friction point.
Can you build your character to just assume you'll never dodge?
No, I mean, so you do end up getting like a character customization thing, which they had to have known what they are doing when they call it when they called it the P organ.
Oh, no.
They had to know. They like it had to be a cynical thing. You can customize, but I do not know that you can customize it in such a way that you can tank stuff. I think that it is really trying to get you into parrying, which is, you know, an integral part of this. Like, it is literally you recharge your special abilities by parrying. Like, it's part of the loop, you know. So I think that's what they're trying to funnel you toward. And that kind of prescriptive play is just not necessarily what I'm here for in these. The other thing, and this might be something that is that is just early game stuff, but the first major area that you get to after the tutorial feels very blah to me. Not just from a theming, because it's Victorian city or what have you. You've got to establish a baseline, you know, like theming wise, like, okay, like this is the city street. And then later you're probably going to go to like a cool fucked up, like clockwork church or something like that. Mm-hmm. But just from the wireframe, it's just kind of a bunch of like combat hallways is what it feels like. Mm. And it is something that I noticed was it's kind of just there's a lack of like visual landmarking. As far as I can tell, like it feels like a very anonymous space. And when I was exploring it, trying to get my way into nooks and crannies or, you know, find stuff, it was just like, all right, I literally have no idea where I am in this, because there's no line of sight and everything just feels like streets and alleyways. Bloodborne, again, this is a game that is begging the comparison, so I will make it. I will oblige it by making the comparison. Bloodborne does have the streets kind of thing, but each one of them is relatively unique. You know, here's the opening alleyway that has all of the abandoned carriages, right? Here's the square where all of the people are burning somebody at the stake, right? So it's kind of like this little mob. Like right after that is the fountain square where the ogre is, and where the ogre is on the prowl. And like if you go off to the side, in one place there's the ravens, and on the other side there's the dogs. You know, like I just, you know, like those are like very intentional set pieces that it is like putting you through. Mm-hmm. In this, it's like they just kind of painted with a city street brush and said, all right, we're going to put like this mix up of enemies right here. And then maybe down here, there's going to be one on the roof. And then when you round the corner, there's going to be another mix up of enemies, you know, on this street. And maybe it's going to end in a car that, you know, is blocking the path. So you've got to turn around and then look for a ladder that you're going to see when you're coming at it from a different way. Yeah.
It's much less like set PC and more like,
yeah,
filling a dungeon algorithmic in a D&D campaign or something.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit algorithmic. I'm not going to call it filler because like it is designed, at least from a play perspective. You know, it's just not so far giving me very interesting things. Okay. That said, that could just be because I'm early and I'm still on the streets and, you know, whatnot. But when this is your first 3 hours of the game or so, and you do not have that, oh shit, they're burning that person alive and I'm avoiding patrols of people from this mob kind of moment in this game where you are begging me to compare it, then I feel fair and justified in asking for something akin to that, right?
What does Liza P do for like bonfires or like Estus Flask and stuff like that? Do they have their own version of exactly that? Or
so they've got bonfires in this, they're called stargazers, and they function just like that. You know, when you rest at it, it'll heal you, but it will also revive enemies around you. That is relatively similar. They've done something cool with the Estus, and like this is something, it is like the one area where a bunch of different Souls-like developers have all brought really good ideas to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think like Death's Gambit has the best articulation of this, where you can allocate to healing items that have roughly different effects as you find them. But this one has something cool. The little touch that it has is thematically you're this mechanical puppet kind of thing, and you heal yourself with this little charge kind of thing. You start out with 3 charges, which will heal you, heal the majority, like a good chunk of your health bar, which is, which is to be expected. Once you have used all of those, it starts recharging your last one, as you attack and as you, parry, and a little bit as you block, I think. So you can use all of them, but it will always be working your way back to having one. Which makes for these really high drama little situations where it's like, all right, I desperately need a heal, but that heal is not going to make itself happen. and like, I am really rewarded by taking high risk actions. when I have very little ability to sustain a mistake in order to get this like last minute second wind that might make the difference in this fight or this encounter. And I think that is a very smart piece of design.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. So that's like, that's a good idea.
And it's like strictly better, right? Because it's, you have a way of getting more instead of just like one direction running out and then just being done.
Yes. Yeah. It is a good system. The other thing I will say is very early on, I don't know if you get more of these, but P's left arm or whatever is explicitly mechanical and modifiable, which means that
Pinocchio Commando.
I mean, a little bit, yeah. I don't know if one of the mods is actually his wife, like in the Xbox 360 Bionic Commando from 2009. Spoilers for that.
Pinocchio Mando, please.
No, come on, Dennis. Sorry, I can usually go along, but that was... man.
it was improvement, right? It was improvement.
It was a little bit of a stretch, I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah, sorry.
Rolling with disadvantage.
The first upgrade that you get for it is very fun, which is basically it is Scorpion's get over here spear thing. It's like a little grappling hook, which you can't use for grappling hook purposes, but you can use at a distance to yank enemies closer to you. Maybe not all the way, but enough to interrupt them. And like very specifically in these encounters, if you see an enemy that is like readying a ranged attack, locking onto them and interrupting them by yanking them closer and then taking them off the board by attacking them and killing them is very satisfying.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's a cool system as well. Like, I don't know if they gave you the coolest one at the start, probably didn't, but they gave you a good one at the start. So yeah, I was happy to see that. Hmm. Yeah. Really wish they didn't call the upgrade system the P organ.
Can you make it longer?
I mean, related to Pinocchio stuff, there is like a little dialogue system. Like when you get to the first of the hub areas where you're talking to NPCs and stuff, the door asks you whether or not you are human. And it gives you an option to say yes or no. And I said yes, I am human, just to see what would happen. It said incorrect, the first command of the robots. It's like it's Asimov's laws, but then there's a fourth one, which is the puppets cannot lie. But it put up like the graphical treatment on it was like I had made some kind of meaningful choice. I do not know if that changes, you know, the story or if it changes mechanical stuff. Like maybe if you lie enough, your nose becomes big enough that you can use it as a club or a rapier. I've got no clue. But that was marked. So your question about does it get longer, it does bear out.
That would be really.
I like the idea that like the Asimov's laws that you can protect yourself as long as it doesn't cause harm to a human. Uh-huh. You can cause harm to a human if they want you to lie.
And I forget if Asimov's laws are hierarchical, if one supersedes the other. I think it possibly does, and the fact that lying is at the ends. I've got no idea. I don't know.
That'd be really interesting if they tied like the talking dialogue parts with the mechanics of the fighting, where it's like if you wanted to be a heavy class or whatever, you have to like lie in every dialogue so your nose gets bigger and then it's like a heavy weapon or something like that. But I guess it does limit it in that you'd only have like two directions now with how you can go, like honest, right, like lightweight or lying heavyweight or something like that. But that's really interesting.
It also raises the question, if you cannot lie, then why is it giving you the option?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I don't know. So there we go. I said this game did not give me the meaningful mysteries that I felt motivated to find the answer to. That is one of them. I am curious about that. But
okay,
yeah,
and it's not strictly a plot hole, it is something that was set up, so that's good. Yeah,
possibly. I don't know. It'd be cool if they address that, and if that is kind of core to things, but I've got no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I mean, all of the puppets are freaking out and have, you know, been killing humans for an indeterminate amount of time in this city. Like it's horrible. It's basically an apocalypse for the civilization. P or Pinocchio or whatever is different. He is not going crazy. He's not killing humans. Killing a bunch of puppets, but yeah.
He's built different.
Like literally there might be some kind of difference, and given the myth, you know, there might be, you know, the story might go in the direction of what does it take for him to become a real boy. They might be doing a bicentennial man kind of thing, which makes it sound like it's a joke that I'm making, but I'm not. Yeah, I don't know.
That's interesting. I was unaware of the entire like robot bent of the game until you were describing it. So
yeah, it's like steampunk Pinocchio. Where, yeah, you know, he's not the only puppet. Like Geppetto has, you know, he is this inventor who has figured out a way to harness this special kind of energy to power these monsters, because they're monsters in the game, to power these automatons. And then like at least the society of this city, Krot is the name of it, has been built up around it. Hmm. Around this technology. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Wish I liked it more. Wish I didn't find the theming as dorky as it is. I understand a lot of people have found joy. I don't enjoy in it. I don't think I'm above it. It's just everybody has their themes and stuff that they're weak to, and the ones that they are immune to. And darker, edgier Pinocchio is just kind of I can't see a way to get there. So
yeah,
we have all the darker, edgier that we can stand.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does seem like a tricky combination to land.
Mm-hmm.
but
maybe they do. Maybe it gets substantially cooler as more stuff gets out. Like, I'm not going to cast judgment based on the first, you know, few hours of it.
Yeah. The whale boss battle is metal.
The what?
I said the whale boss battle is metal.
Possibly. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, that's the main thing I've got other than a bunch of stuff for WoF.
Word.
Yeah.
Cool. I want to ask a question. I don't know if this is a preview or not. Is anyone going to play the Cyberpunk DLC that's coming out this week?
I'm curious about it.
That would require me to play Cyberpunk.
Where I'm at too. Yeah.
My understanding is like the 2.0 update that comes out with this, like it is enough that the game is getting this big reevaluation. Mm-hmm. I don't know that. I think at this point, it would probably, if you're going to play it now, it'd be a good time to do it based on the system changes and also the stability stuff. With an asterisk, I have also seen a bunch of videos of weird jank with it, but everybody has their own tolerances for jank.
It is weird, like this and like No Man's Sky, where it's like the double evaluation of the same game because it's continually worked on.
Yeah.
I like things like Baldur's Gate, where there's just one good game.
Oh, Baldur's Gate had the benefit of the open early access. So
yeah. Maybe that would make the difference if there was Cyberpunk open beta is what released 2 years ago.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's all I got.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, so we're going to imagine a scenario where aliens have arrived on Earth, and after meeting with the dolphins and the mice, of course, they have asked you for one video game they can play to best understand humanity. What game do you recommend, and why?
Yeah, and I will get us started here with Dakota, who says, Candy Crush, and tell them our secrets to life are at the end. How quickly can we build some escape rockets?
Brilliant!
There's nothing in the question that says the aliens are going to obliterate us. They just want to understand us.
It'd probably be better just to try and steal their spaceships, because I don't think we're going to build things that are faster than theirs.
Guys, the spaceships are all powered by Candy Crush.
Oh, no.
They're the ones who originated it's a real Stargate thing. They're the ones who originated Candy Crush. Oh, man. Ben, tell me what Peter says.
Peter says, not going to lie, I'd probably tell them to play any of the GTA games. I'm personally not a fan of the games, but based on my current field of employment, it is fairly accurate representation of humanity. Plus, the fact that so many people just feign ignorant helplessness, and it's just disappointing for me personally.
I don't know that you would want to train them that these are our customs. Yeah. It's not my place to undercut you. It's just
there's no wrong answers. Just speculating on what the outcome of this one would be.
True. Yeah. I think that maybe they would get some strange ideas about the value of human life.
Yeah. Perhaps. There's rewards when you kill 100 people in 15 minutes.
Dennis, what does Greg say?
Greg says, I think I'd suggest one of the Civilization games. They can learn in several hours many of the basic concepts humans hold dear, such as working together, warfare, diplomacy, surviving tough challenges, and the rise of society and technologies, while also being treated to a rough and quick overview of 6,000 years of human history.
So this was my first answer, but I have a revised answer that I'll share at the end. But
ooh.
Yeah, same page with Greg, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's that is a very good, sincere answer. Yeah. Callum writes, either something with a really human story like Gone Home or Portal, because species that can make Portal, any species that can make Portal is worth keeping.
Fair.
Good on ya. Let's see. Ben, what does Gwen say?
Gwen says, oh, this is easy. 2023's humanity. I think there's a tutorial, too. Harder question next time, please. That was directed to you, Dennis.
I need to play that. That looked really really fun. It's like Lemmings-like with a cool
and it's in VR
video style.
As well.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's right there in the name.
True. Gwen, you succeeded at this question. Dennis, what does Phil say?
Phil says simply, The Sims.
I kind of like the GTA one. I don't want them to get the idea that they can build us a pool and then take away the ladder. Yeah. Let's see. Rizana says, I'd show them the video of the journalist who couldn't beat the Cuphead tutorial. I don't know what point you're trying to make, Rizana.
I know what video I'll be watching after this.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, gosh. And Ben, round us out with what Rookie says.
Rookie says, I'd show them Don't Shit Your Pants. It's the densest game I've ever played in units of glee per minute, GPMs. It shows humans sinking laterally. The technically you didn't shit your pants ending. the importance of doing things gently and covers the entire breadth of human experience. Not shitting your pants is a prime concern in early childhood, and it never really becomes less important to you. It just becomes easier to avoid until a very old age, where it loops back around to being a prime concern again. It's the circle of life in a 20-minute game.
Hey, Rookie, that's a really good answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that quite a bit. And that makes them more empathetic to the concerns of the people with gastrological distress than I am 100% for that. God, Don't Shit Your Pants is a really good video game.
It's special.
And it's educational as well.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
I haven't shit my pants since playing that game, that's for sure.
Do you guys remember, I can't remember if it was, so I guess I don't remember, Kohl's or Kmart did the I Shipped My Pants ads?
Oh, that might have been Kmart, actually.
Yeah, those were fun before that company imploded.
For some reason, yeah. Those two things feel related to me.
little bit. Yeah, okay, no, that was Kmart. There we go. That was a 2013 ad campaign. That was after I stopped watching commercials. Why do I know that?
I
know.
God. broke through the clutter.
Maybe. My answer, I'm just going to, it's going to be a little bit like a joke, but it's going to be a little bit cynical. The best way it's going to be a lot cynical. The best way to demonstrate the primary organizing factor of human civilization would probably be to give them something like Diablo Immortal. Basically, I just did a search for what are the most exploitative games. I could say Fortnite. I could say any of this. I'm serious. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the amount of endeavor to make something to, you know, put out into the world just to trick people into gambling for something of very little value, it would give an awful lot of insight, not into our, you know, best angels, not into the way we would want to portray ourselves, but to say like, hey, this is what we do to each other. So give us your worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, if you join Diablo Immortal with my code, I get some in-game gold. So just tell your mothership to use my code when you play.
Yeah. Yeah. That way they're in your downline. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ben, how about you?
So the revised answer I had, because I thought about the civilization one, but I'm like, the things that I guess worried me about it was that I didn't think it would be accurate enough, where it's like, it's usually like a proc-gen map and not like the actual world. And it's like, it's kind of wonky where it's like different civilizations have different technologies at different times that don't line up. So my revised answer was going to be a board game. I'm sneaking it in.
Okay.
There's a board game called History of the World, which I'm not sure if I've talked about on here or not, but I played it one time in Austin, and it basically every round is a different time period of the history of civilization. And it's supposed to be somewhat accurate. So it's like, if you pick like, oh, I'm the Egyptians, I get 6 troops in Egypt, and then I can do some attacks from there and spread out from there. But eventually it's like someone will be like the American Empire, and they'll put troops on that part of the map and everything. But then the most memorable part of it is at one point in time, somebody becomes the Mongols and they drop 20 troops down in Mongolia and just purge all of Asia and Europe. So,
yeah.
I feel like that would be a good experience for aliens to learn about, like, the history of civilization. So
I like that. I had never heard about that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, there's two ways to go with this, which is like the educational world history route, and then like the what are humans like route. And I like Civilization for the first, just kind of the highlights, the superheroes of our history across the world. For the latter, I like maybe using Journey.
Okay.
As just like a, here is the range of human emotion.
Okay.
Kind of laid out. Even though it's not explicitly a human in Journey, I feel like that is the game that moved me the most and mm-hmm. felt very, very relatable.
Yeah.
And encompasses all of the feels.
And it's pretty abstract, so it's easy to connect to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And doesn't require any kind of like communication or any like verbal capacity at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Good answers. Good question.
As long as the aliens aren't carpets and would be offended by that, then yeah.
Nice. All right, good job, everyone. The Earth is saved.
Cool. we gave them enough to demonstrate that we are worth saving. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this question, and thank you, everybody, for answering. If you would like to participate in these, go to the Duckfeed Community group on Facebook and watch the prompts to come up on Monday afternoons.
The End Boss.
Now it is time for The End Boss, where we talk about what's going on in the world of video games and how we feel about it. Let's see. Ben, you have follow-up on something that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. What's new in the Unity situation?
Yeah, so kind of as you and I think we in general predicted, is that Unity pulled back on a lot of the changes that they announced a couple weeks ago. Just as a brief reminder of that, they had made an announcement that they're changing their pricing model, where basically game companies would have to pay per install of game instead of a pricing fee of per purchase. Which is a huge difference and kind of completely like takes revenue away from certain types of games, and
yeah.
also has like a slew of problems with it where, if people pirate the game or like maliciously install it over and over again, like there's plenty of problems with that sort of thing. But mm-hmm. anyway, Unity made some announcements, I think as of last Thursday. They put out an announcement of like walking back some of these changes. Specifically what they made mention of is the big differences is the pricing model that you have is going to be tied to the version of Unity that you're using, meaning that the games that are in development right now using like the 2022, 2023 version of Unity will not be under that pricing model, but anything using the 2024 model will have to use that pricing model. So it's kind of a middle ground where they're still kind of walking towards a bad decision, but
yeah.
They're at least differentiating it so that games don't have to completely stop development in Unity. I'm not sure if that is acceptable to game companies or not.
Yeah, I'm less worried about game companies mm-hmm. and more thinking like this does not seem to be very future looking on Unity's part. Game development is not actually the only thing. Application for Unity. Like this whole controversy found out that like movie studios and stuff use it. Like it's an engine that is used for a bunch of different stuff. But mm-hmm. like Unity, looking at its roots. You know, the main reason people used it, well, back in the day, it was because of like interoperability and also being able to make stuff for web and mm-hmm. run it there. But also, mm-hmm. it was incredibly easy to learn, right? Mm-hmm. If somebody is starting out their career or looking at the smattering of engines that are available to them, understanding that any engine made by a big company could do this rug pull at any point, why would they decide to learn the one that was that has already pulled the rug? Right.
Yeah.
Why would you learn the one that has announced we are going to be the first and fastest to pull the rug?
It seems very short term thinking. It is designed to get cash in the short term. And that does not seem to be good for anybody except for the executives who are going to cash out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Small side note, they did say that one of the changes is they're not going to require people to have the Unity splash screen at the beginning of a game anymore, which is like, oh, well, that's kind of nice. Okay. I appreciate that.
But that's like the reasonable thing to ask for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
But I mean, this to the whole every, you know, all the executives will have cashed out. This, I think, is a direct symptom of a corporate culture where everyone, not just executives, changes roles every, you know, 2 years ish. Yeah. And it's, you know, that's how you learn. You got to grow. Mm-hmm. You got to do this. But it means that you only care about what happens to the business in the next 2 years. So you can write your, you know, work results and get the promotion and then you're on to the next thing.
You're only thinking a quarter at a time. Mm-hmm. And that is that is no way to captain a ship.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's still like pretty unresolved. I haven't really heard responses from game companies since this announcement. So I'm not sure how people are responding to this.
Yeah.
Like if you know, if this is enough to stop game companies from moving off of Unity, which a lot of them kind of said they would under these announcements. So I'm not sure if this middle ground will be enough to keep people on it or not.
The biggest one to me, like, is not, you know, somebody who does not make games, but, you know, consumes them and, you know, is concerned about the health of the developers that I, you know, that I am a fan of. The biggest thing for me is they took away the retroactive thing, which just makes sense. Somebody who developed a game and put it out like in 2015 using Unity under completely different terms, you know, being dragged into this where suddenly their entire compensation is changed around it, and they are outside of a spot where people are buying their game at full price, you know, suddenly being hit with these bills if the game goes into a bundle or something. Like, that is just extremely bad for everybody if that's the case. Backing off of this, you know, that is a good outcome at the very least.
So while I agree with that, it is still worrying that they can just change that policy, right? Like, they could change the policy back and be like, never mind, like, everything's under this now.
Yeah.
There was one thing I'd read, it was when we were talking about it a few weeks ago, how, like, someone mentioned how originally, like, their terms of service was on GitHub as a way to, like, keep it tracked and say that, like, hey, we wouldn't change it beyond this or whatever. But then that got pulled, like, later.
Did you see the excuse that they gave when they pulled it?
We're evil.
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. It's like the Google don't be evil. We're like, we're going to change that. Yeah. We want to be a little evil. Sorry.
No, the excuse that they gave for pulling it, and I think it was during this controversy, was, it got so few views, we pulled it down out of consideration because nobody was looking at it. Like, you assholes.
Lord.
Womp womp. So I mean, the silver lining is at least there's kind of like a path, especially if it's for small game companies who, like, it would be a tremendous amount of work to shift to another game engine. That's like the silver lining, but it's still kind of a shitstorm a little bit. So
regrettable.
Shrug.
Speaking of regrettable things, hey Dennis, what other disturbing things have come out of the Microsoft leaks?
Yeah, so this is really interesting. You asked about the Microsoft leaks last week, and I just hadn't had a chance to go through them. So as I looked and saw other people discovering interesting stuff, this article rose to the surface. It's basically an email from Phil Spencer, who's the big man over at Xbox, kind of outlining just how irrelevant or how much disruption AAA publishers are facing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a very eloquent and spot on assessment of the industry. I read it going like, yeah, you get it. Yeah. Which is basically like, look, the value of big publishers was our relationships with retailers when games were bought as a physical thing. That's not the case anymore. And so we're struggling with how we're relevant. Hey,
okay,
great
cool.
Awareness. Yeah. Excellent. Where I disagree is where that's landed. Which he kind of leads into. So, you know, we need to make sure to have as many monetization points in our subscription services as possible. You know, both, you know, have robust subscription services, have small people put their games on our subscription services, and then make sure that the big people on our subscription services have lots of microtransactions in their games.
Mm-hmm. So like daddy that. Can take a slice.
Yes. And it's like, well, I don't know, maybe you could have seen that reality and made some different conclusions about how to change your development, but sure, let's go with that.
Yeah.
Look at like every successful game in the past, like 3 years, that was huge. And it's like no microtransactions, single player, yep. story yep. rich.
Yeah. Not only that, but also any attempt to make something that is live servicey, like mm-hmm. the bottom done fell out of that, like, a while ago. And also there is just a huge player backlash to it. Like it is yeah. not something I don't get the sense just be, you know, maybe I just am in a bubble or what have you, but like, it is not something that people are hungry for. So it is only something that we could be dread kicking and screaming into, mm-hmm. by actors like Microsoft, who are big enough to gobble up and monopolize enough of the industry to where, you know, they can force us into it.
So I think where the point of confusion comes in on is like things like, you know, like how there's an avatar on like Xbox where you can buy like clothes for it and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That gets like a huge amount of revenue for Xbox, and like things like Fortnite, where it's like so much of the money is coming through this like customizable thing. And it's like, so they see that and they think, okay, well, let's just put that in games. Both are things you see on your TV, but it's not the same thing. Like people aren't playing games for that sort of experience.
Well, and it's very interesting to me as well. Like literally I'm sending this article to my class being like, see, this is why we do what we do. Yeah. I think personally the answer is a big change in the thinking around what it means to launch a game. That AAA games, I mean, honestly need to take the approach that Baldur's Gate did, where this was in early access. You could go and play Baldur's Gate for the past, what was it, 2 or 3 years?
2 years-ish, yeah.
And you knew what you were getting into at the beginning. It's an early access game. It's rough. It's not finished. But you are going to be a part of the feedback. And like that whole cycle of you don't have a launch of your game like you launch a movie, right? But you have this work of art that is going to be refined through the input of the people who care about it mm-hmm. on the player side over the course of maybe years. That doesn't jive with the corporate quarterly, you know, thinking that we were just talking about. But it is so obvious and so powerful if you look at the games that are succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, live service or not. Yeah. I think there's live service fatigue. Like there is Marvel movie fatigue right now.
Yeah.
And you know, single player, multiplayer doesn't matter. I think it's that openness in development. And man, I think that's going to take some significant changes in the way that AAA studios work.
But, yeah.
For the time being, until they figure that out, expect lots of more subscription services and microtransactions.
Of course, and different tiers and subscription services. Like we laugh at Sony for the way that they did it, but honestly, that is more aligned with this thinking than even what Microsoft does. So
yeah. So
ugh. Yep. Oh well. What's there to do? At the very least, you have indie. And
yeah.
I don't know if I'm so out of touch with normies. Like, I don't even care. I don't look for games that are like huge, big events. Like, it doesn't need to be a marquee thing. That's just not the way I engage with shit anymore.
Says the man who's making a podcast about Baldur's Gate.
No, careful about going near water, because you might create steam since you've been burned.
I mean, yeah, no, but so it's a big marquee thing, but like I don't know, we were not, I was not anticipating when it would get full release, mm-hmm. You know, and also I was not, you know, we weren't there right away saying like, yeah, let's have a big show about this. It wasn't, you know, chasing clout preemptively, right?
I'm not trying to undercut you. Yeah. I know where your heart lies.
it's so funny. I think of a Yingling billboard of all things that I saw. You guys, like in college, you couldn't get Yingling, and then it kind of blew up. light beer that's got a cult following. Now their distribution is much wider, but the billboard said it took us 100 years to become an overnight success.
Yeah.
I think that's so true, that this, you know, this marquee, oh my God, Baldur's Gate, the perfect game, came out of nowhere, game of the year. This is how you make the game. Like I said, it's been out there for multiple years for people to play and give feedback on. And that's the reason it's done so well, not because they found some magic formula.
Yeah. And also Divinity Original Sin, Divinity Original Sin 2. Like the,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Larian had a record. They were waiting to break out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's recursive iteration going on here.
Yeah. You can see the positive, the changes they make over those courses of the game. Same way that, like, The Witcher 3, you can see the positive changes that that studio made for the first three games to get to that point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. My story is nowhere near as big. Since we recorded last time, there was Tokyo Game Show. There are lots of there's some big announcements that came out of that, but this is one that I want to highlight here. The Apollo Justice Ace Attorney trilogy has a release date. It's coming out January the 25th of 2024. Bring this up because we've talked about a bunch of Ace Attorney games doing the bonus level thing. So there is that first trilogy of the games that was released in a high definition collection. There were other ones that were not as popular as those first three. And in fact, the second two, I think they came to iOS at some point, but even those might not run anymore. They were digital distribution only on the 3DS, which is a system where you can't buy games on it anymore. So Capcom has rightly done has made the correct decision by making up-res kind of remaster, but selling these in a collection. Completing, this second trilogy, completing a bit of the present day story of those games. They're going to be coming out. So that is cool. Some of those games drag on just a little bit too much, in my opinion, but there are neat little, always fun little hooks in the cases, and each of them adds interesting little mechanical flourishes. So I don't know. I'd say check them out. Check it out when it comes. Mm-hmm.
Now, are any of these new games, or are these all just like remasters or packaging ups?
It's just a repackaging of the DS entry and then the two 3DS ones.
I swear to God, you could throw any adjectives after a Phoenix Wright or this. I've never even heard of Apollo Justice before.
Mm-hmm.
And I would believe you that it's like, oh, yeah, this is a mainline entry that just never got translated.
Yeah. I think only one of the big ones hasn't been translated yet after they brought the Great Ace Attorney collection over here. Mm-hmm. And it's the sequel to the sequel to the spinoff about the prosecutor Miles Edgeworth, where you're going around at investigating cases. But but that has a fan translation, so it's still playable. I think that does it.
Hey, more way to play these games.
Yep. January 25th. It's coming out. I'm looking forward to it. Cool. That sounds like a show to me. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 474. We really appreciate you taking the time. If you want to help out the show, you can leave a rating or review in the podcast directory of your choice. You can join the Duckfeed community group. You can back us on Patreon. You can tell a friend. This is a network-wide announcement. I gave the Real Itch Hours announcement at the beginning of this, but if you are a premium subscriber through the Patreon and you want to listen to that content through Spotify, that integration is now available to you. Look on the Duckfeed Patreon. There's a little announcement post with a link to the instructions on how to access that stuff. You just link your Patreon account to Spotify, and then it'll pop up for you. don't feel great about Spotify as a company, but it is an integration that Patreon made, so it makes sense to turn it on so people can listen wherever they want to. Complicated to exist in the world.
Hard to be ethical, just like in Baldur's Gate.
Yeah. I mean, it's so fun to be unethical, though. Dennis, anything for the people?
No, I think I'll stick with the social call outs.
Cool. I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at Duckfeed TV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me at Furia Games on Blue Sky. And how about this? For anyone who's listening to the admin, I've got two invites that I don't know what to do with. So message me on Slack or elsewhere, and then I can let you on to Blue Sky too.
Yeah, rewards.
Mm-hmm. And I've been Ben Merkel, and I have nothing for you.
And stick around for some titles. I only have one. Bounce House of Leaves.
Yes. The only other one I have is See the Lightning.
Oh man, I don't care for that. I can't reward that.
And I forgot to write down titles, so
Bounce House of Leaves.
Okay. It is decided.